With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this. It is pilot episodes and a new pilot episodes for the new year. So why don't I start by introducing our three intrepid air adventurers. We've got the guy whose service entry date predated the helicopter by 10 years. It's Parky. Hello, Parky.
I predate a helicopter by...
What's that? So about 1936?
About. And of course, there is a guy that used to land vertically, but now all he does is helicopter thinking in the MOD. It's Godders. Hello, mate.
Yes, I am here. And you're right, actually. All I do is sort of think about stuff in the MOD rather than actually go flying, except for my new Christmas present, but more of that later.
Ooh, like, sitting on beanbags, brainstorming, things that you would never, ever would get away with in the RAF, but now you're doing it.
No, that's working at Google. MOD is a little different.
Excellent. And lastly, it's the chopper that no one wants to fly with. It's Dunk. How are you, mate?
Glorious, thanks, mate. Absolutely glorious. With that introduction, how could I not be?
That was a belter of an intro.
That was a good one, yeah.
Helicopter was 1939.
Wow.
There you go.
It's a good old stick you had there, Parky. I'll give you that.
Seems like there's a helicopter theme going on this evening.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I'd say so. So why don't you boys tell me what you've been up to over the festival? Are you doing much flying?
Well, to be honest, no, not really.
Is that why you're grumpy?
Yeah, I'm a bit grumpy. Although I've done quite a lot this week since we've been back. It was great. Our aeroplane bust, sadly, on the last week of term. So we had to play games instead. Well, yeah.
It's the cuts from those suits in the MOD, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Flipping blizz with his helicopter thinking.
I can't have fun. No one else is.
Tell me what happened to your aeroplane then, Dunk.
Well, it turns out that they found out that a man, not an Air Force man, it's an engine man who makes the engine or repairs the engine, had put something on slightly back to front, which made the engine blow up after a little while. So they had to say again.
Was it the propeller?
Is that what that thing does?
it didn't accelerate very well, did it?
Anyway, so yeah, they had to come and look at it. Turns out, as was fine, but they had to come and look anyway and take the thing to bits and peer into the guts of the engine and then give a thumbs up. But by that time, it was too late. It's time.
Is that your Tucano?
Yeah.
How is the Tucano? Is it good to fly?
Great. Have you never flown it?
I flew it once about a million years ago.
Why don't you come up and fly with me? You never.
Oh yes. Right, I'm in.
Oh really? You're a bit of a seagull now, aren't you? He says yes. He'll probably. No,
I went flying in that prefect up at Cranwell a few months ago. That was brilliant. I love that. Did we ever talk about that? Yes, we did.
He'll chop you, Godders. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, that's true. I've flown with him before. I know what it'll be like. It'll be nibbling away.
Your wings from
the ball's not in the middle. Come on, we're not fast.
I actually got told off.
Are you planning to fly at 1,005 feet?
Yeah, I can't help it.
So Dunk, is it fair to say that your Tucano broke? Was it just basic human error?
It was basic human error. An engine went kaput and somewhere, and because that particular type of engine is in all sorts of different airplanes, not just the Tucano. They had to check all of them to make sure that, you know, the thing hadn't been put on back to front.
So I'm going to link this to the F-35, actually, would you believe it? Because it's my understanding, and Goddard, you can tell me if I'm wrong, and no doubt I probably am. But carrier aircraft have always had two engines, traditionally, because, of course, that's been more reliable. But apparently, engines now are so reliable that the main problem that people face, or the, you know, the people that fly these aircraft face, is human error. So by having one engine, actually the failure rate is less. Is that an actual thing?
I can see where that thinking would come in. But no, they've always flown single-engine aeroplanes off of carriers, you know, starting from when Winkle Brown was doing it in single-engine aeroplanes all the way up through the, you know, the A7 and...
Harrier, of course. Here it goes.
But, I mean, all the later jet aircraft flown off US aircraft carriers have all been two-engine for that reason.
I know they've definitely got used to twin engine. So I know intellectually bringing the F-35C into service in the US Navy with a single engine, I think has been difficult for the guys who've been used to twin engine aeroplanes for such a long time. Because there genuinely is a psychological difference. You know, when I stepped out of Harrier flying 20 years ago, and then, in fact, it was through the F-16 and then into the
Typhoon.
That's
only got one engine, Goddard.
Yeah, I know, but then into the Typhoon. I suddenly wouldn't want to go and fly across the Atlantic in a single-engine aeroplane again. You know, it's a psychological aspect, even though I'd done it quite a few times in both those aeroplanes.
But I don't think it's a carrier-specific thing. Do you, Goddard? The fact is that I've only ever flown aircraft with one engine because I can't cope with any more. Clearly it's far too complicated for me, but the everyone that has flown two engine airplanes, if within the Air Force, they go, why would you possibly fly a single engine airplane? And it is right, why wouldn't you want one that can get you home if the other one blows up? Well, so I'm not sure it's carrier specific.
So the thought is there that now if a jet engine goes wrong and they're side by side, the failure will be so catastrophic it'll take the other one out anyway, so you may as well just have one.
No, that's a very rare case. I mean, Parker, you've flown twin-engine aeroplanes for a long time. Many catastrophic failures from a single-engine failure?
Yeah, I have been single-engine in a Phantom, Tornado, and Typhoon, actually. Had the first engine flame out in a Typhoon. But
mishandling.
Was it you?
Actually, inlet guide vane stuck, and it was one of those. See, she talks to you, and I can remember just left flame out and just utter disbelief. What? And I, you know, sort of pods the engine page, and I could see the left engine just sort of winding down. And it should have an auto relight as well, but it wouldn't because of the inlet guide vanes were starving the donk of oxygen. But the next thing I did was podge up the fuel page, and it's just weird. I thought I must have run out of fuel, or something horrendous must be happening. But actually, you know, you can remember Typhoon, it's just a non-event single engine. Yeah, it's got so much power. So, I mean, God is, you know, I think once you do get used to two engines, I went from the Tornado to the F-16, and yeah, you do get kind of used to it, I suppose, after a while. But it's definitely a comfort blanket having a second engine.
Yeah, so I'm absolutely sure they're much more reliable these days. I mean, definitely, although touching wood, you know, the EJ 200 that powers the Typhoon is probably, I'm sure there's alien technology in there because of just how reliable that engine is. You know, with 1,000 hours on the aeroplane myself, I never had a single engine snag whatsoever. I mean, Parky, you were the first to get 1,000 hours on it, and that's one essentially engine flame out. And you could probably count on one hand the amount of people we know in thousands and thousands of hours of flying. Therefore, you know how good they are. It was interesting that, you know, that they're still looking at the F-35 crash that happened with the US Marine Corps before Christmas. But there's the issue right there. If one of those flames out, You know, the only way is down. However, you've got a cheaper aeroplane right there because you've reduced the you know, the amount of systems in it. You've got a lighter aeroplane, etc., etc. So, you know, it's swings and roundabouts, definitely.
Just give us an indication. I mean, you said that the was it EJ? What was the engine designation for the Euro, for the Typhoon?
EJ 200.
Give me an indication of how that fares compared to what they put in the F-35 now.
I'm not sure there's enough F-35 hours to know that. That's the F-135 engine. Pratt & Whitney is the main engine in that, and there's a lift fan in the F-35B, made by Rolls-Royce. But the technology in there is, you know, is amazing. Maybe we want to talk about in another pod how that thing, and especially if we manage to go and, you know, fly the simulator up at Wharton, but how the thing transitions at the back, the nozzle, you know, turns, twists and comes 90 degrees down, the door opens on the top and the lift fan spools up through a clutch. The amount of testing that has gone on, with, you can imagine that clutch system itself, you know, so that main engine is driving around and that clutch engages in less than a second and spins that lift fan up to you know, to fighting speed. That cannot fail. So you know, they've used every single modern technology they can. And actually look at, you know, Rolls-Royce's record.
When anyone says something can't fail, it can probably fail.
Yeah, if I said can't fail, would be a long time between failures. But look at Rolls-Royce's record in airliners and, you know, how those things just keep going. You know, I think the more you fly them, the more they keep going.
Thank goodness.
Dunk, what? Yeah. Have you ever had to deal with a flameout? And actually, can you even get a flameout on a Harrier?
Yeah, you could. Again, inlet guide vane problems would cause you all no end of problems. The other thing, of course, the big danger for aircraft really, but particularly a single engined aircraft at low level, which is what the Harrier's environment really was, is a bird strike. And we had a number of losses from in the circuit to actually, you know, going at speed at low level. If a big one of those, the engine's pretty good actually, it would generally eat the bird up, spit it out the back and keep going. It would probably have quite a lot of damage, but it would normally keep going. But a friend of ours, Buzzard or Eagle, on short finals, down the intake, and the engine wasn't having it, and the aeroplane just fell out the sky, and so the aircraft just fell out the sky, and he had to eject.
Really stupid question, okay? And I appreciate this is really stupid. Why don't they just have some form of wire mesh over the intakes, a grid?
I think the bird would still.
Yeah, it'd be diced bird going into the engine.
400 miles an hour, it would just chop it up quite nicely, and then the thing would still go down the intake.
But, I mean, it's surely better than no grid over the intake, especially if it's at a slant. Or have I just got that completely wrong?
I think as well that it just the, you know, especially going supersonic or massive high speed, the design of intake, it is rocket science, you know. The ramps all move just to make sure the speed of the air hitting the first stage of the compressors is just sort of optimal. You just probably couldn't have that sort of interference there. It sounds like a no-brainer, but it just wouldn't work. I'm sure they would have thought of that.
Yeah, there are greater minds than me involved in aviation. I'll give you boys that much.
Well, you never know. It's the sort of things we come up with the MOD whilst lounging around on beanbags.
Yeah, we all know what good ideas come up from the MOD.
Yes.
Yeah. Around takeaway coffees and all and everything else which you get up to.
Yeah, oh yeah, we've got a Costa in MOD.
Of course you have. But I wanted to talk this episode about advice, and particular advice from seniors and people that might have influenced you boys as airmen growing up in the RAF.
Well, I was, it might be a revelation to the person that listens. But we actually talk about this before we start recording. But I'm sure if you dig into it, there are pockets of advice there. Actually, now you say it, one does stand out. It was an American exchange officer when I was going through Valley on flying training. And I think it must have been an end of course interview. So I passed the course, knew where I was going. And the guy said, right, make sure you find one thing on the squadron that no one knows anything about, become the expert, and they can never get rid of you.
When I
was new on the squadron, I turned up and volunteered to be the first person on this.
The toilet cleaner.
You were quite expert on that, actually. But the it was the mission planning system. So this is the mid-90s.
That's such 10-year-old banter. You were the expert on that. Is that what they teach you at MOD?
Right, well, hang on. Just... Did you believe it started with the toilet dunk? And so when I went to the squadron, they were just starting out, just introducing this electronic mission planning, because before you just got a map out, you got a ruler, you drew lines on it and off you went. And being computers, most of the older fellas on the squadron had absolutely no clue what the hell was going on with this thing. So there was a couple of us back, one of them being our mate who Dunk just mentioned, who ended up ejecting on short finals out of Larbrook. Went off on this course, came back, and I never told anyone else how to do it. I just hogged it, and they couldn't get rid of me, no matter how bad I was. So it was actually pretty good advice.
What did this system do then? Give us a bit of an indication, because I do like the transition from the old map days where everyone had to do things with rulers and pencils into what we have now.
Well, so the old days of rulers and pencils was a fine art that, the old and bold on the squadron had down to about a 3.5 second planning time to get back from Germany, a low level through the UK, and then land somewhere in the UK, and then you do a rapid plan on the way back. Whereas when they introduced the mission planning system, which everything uses now, it was a little bit ropey. Mm. So we had the ridiculous notion of definitely on 3 Squadron that Dunk was on, so if you're going off in a 4-ship, half of them would do a pencil map plan and the other half would do it on the computer just in case the computer didn't work.
Wow.
The disadvantage of doing it with map and pencil was that you had to enter all of the data via hand. So you had to type in all the waypoints and all that sort of stuff. Whereas as soon as you did it on computer, you just took the brick out, this little data storage thing, stuffed it in the aeroplane, and it downloaded automatically.
Interesting.
When you said that you were indispensable and they couldn't get rid of you, didn't you only do about 500 hours on the Harrier and then they carted you off to the States or something?
973, Dunk.
973?
Not quite 1,000, is it?
Oh,
just missed.
If I'd have done my logbook like Parky, I'd have 3,500.
God, you remind me of who is the Australian cricketer that couldn't quite have it? Don
Bradman.
Yes, retired on average of something like 97 or something.
Now that would be annoying.
Yeah, very very much so.
there's one for future pods. We're probably getting uber niche on mission planning systems, but I flippin' loved them for the whole of my flying career. So it was, actually, I hadn't thought about it until that moment, but that was probably the best piece of advice I've ever had.
Just on that, and whilst it's going through my mind, do you worry that the old skills of navigating are actually leaving the forces in general? And I'll just bring a point, because I was reading an article about GPS and the US Army, the US Air Force, all the US forces, all the NATO forces, and their complete reliance on GPS.
Well, I guess there's an answer for Dunk there in training terms, as to whether the guys and girls that are coming through training are taught the basics of navigation and so on. But Parky, sorry, you were going to say something?
I think to a certain extent you can get massively, reliant on, the kit in the aircraft, can't you? And, low-level nav in the Typhoon, you definitely use the kit way more than just actually looking at features, because it's brilliant. It just worked the whole time. And, it just almost Skydeam is the same thing, just going back to just a stopwatch and a heading and time. And, I think we'd be working hard now doing that. Do you still do it, Dunk?
Yeah, at basic training, they're still it. They use they do a paper plan. But most of the time, there's no point in, training and doing all of your paper plans when actually everything uses a mission planning system. So, but they do one. And then in the Takana, they've got nothing else. So they do have to just go and use the old techniques. When we get to Texan, bizarrely, the aeroplane isn't really set intuitively for low-level navigation. So we're going to have to do it old school. So, and I think it's a good thing. I think you're right, JB. The fact is that those skills are definitely being degraded. But, you know, the question is, do you need to have those skills now that you've got, you know, now you've got, well, we don't know because no one's jammed our GPS yet. So we don't, well, I mean.
Well, so what about at Valley Dunk? Are they essentially using the kit in the T2 Hawk?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, they will. So they'll do one where they'll degrade the system again. But it's only one. It's just a look-see.
JB, it was amazing without the whole, back in the old days, it was brilliant. But there, I mean, with the structure there, but the level of skill that you could get to navigating at 7 miles a minute at low level round Wales on purely a stopwatch and a map. And a compass in the aeroplane. It was unbelievable when you think about it, the sort of that level you got to. But I guess some of it was to an end, you know, in terms of you had to have that because none of the frontline aeroplanes had GPS at that particular time when we were coming through. And I guess they continued it for a bit because it is a way of checking to see whether someone has the capacity, has the ability to be able to, you know, to navigate, to think, to make decisions at those sorts of speeds in that sort of environment.
That's remarkable. So, did you actually have a stopwatch, or was it built into the aircraft?
It was connected to the aeroplane.
Bloody hell.
It was a stopwatch with a start, stop, and a reset button.
Wow. Yeah. That's actually
Parky always
amazing.
Gives me banter because in the Chipmunk.
Thinking about that now.
In the Chipmunk, there is a little clip where you put your issued. It's like a pocket watch, like a silver pocket watch. I went through elementary training. I was issued one of these beautiful. I mean, it's not silver. I guess it's aluminium, but it's a nice stopwatch, an old wind up stopwatch, and I always kept it. So when I got to BBMF, I'd clip my dweeby little stopwatch into the clip. And Parky's like, "What's that?" It's like, "That's my stopwatch for navigating around the place."
But sad little man.
Sad little man.
No,
I've still got it.
Have any of you? Sorry,
you know the. I don't know what they're like now on BBMF. I don't know what it's like in the aircraft you fly down at Headcorn Parky, but definitely, you know, other than Valley, probably my best standard of navigation ever was on the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, because you were just using maps, and although we mission planned it, you were navigating using the map features all of the time and using sort of, you know, learned skill to hit a fly past exactly on second, you know, just based on the features you were seeing, and you know, what time am I supposed to be flying past that wood? Oh, I'm a bit early, I'll just make a wider turn here, you know, that sort of thing.
I think the biggie with the old BBMF before we got the radios with a GPS track, so you got a decent heading, was the using that old compass, which was, you know, maybe plus or minus 10, 20 degrees, and it was just a bit of a vague compass. I'll never forget Dunk landing off some trip, and you've been airborne about an hour 40, and you came back just looking so hot and sweaty and knackered, and you just wandered in and sort of just looked at a map for about 5 minutes on the wall, and just suddenly went, "Oh yeah,
Birmingham Airport."
Yeah, worked out where you must have been, but it was, you know, especially when the, you know, the viz wasn't brilliant, or the, you know, the cloud base. It was extraordinary hard work, I thought, without an accurate heading. That just made it so difficult.
I think you're right. God, is you're right, though. The fact is that your standard of map reading at the end of that was probably the highest that it's been within the Air Force. I went back then to Takana, which is the same thing. It's just a map and a stopwatch. It's the same type of navigation, actually the same speeds. And I think I was going from Linton. I had to go down to St. Athen, and they said, "Oh, how are you going to get down there?" I said, "Well, I'm going to go low level." And they went, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." "What, navigate?" "Yeah." "What, through all of the airspace down there?" I went, "Yeah, it'll be all right." He went, "Oh, I wouldn't do that." And but then, because you're just so used to flying around a country like that in BBMF, it's a non-event.
Did you just point to the Coddington balloon hangar and then hang a right, wait till the Bristol Channel turned up?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Job's good.
Horrendously lost.
Oh yeah, I didn't make it to St. Athen. No, I ended up in Lossiemouth, bizarrely.
Now, just on this sort of navigation thing, have any of you heard of a CNS or ever used one? A celestial navigation system?
Oh, Belter, StarNav.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had one in the roof of the Hercules, remember? Yeah. And in fact, I think the B-2 Spirit stealth bomber has a celestial nav system.
Yeah, this is apparently what the Russians use exclusively because of the fears of GPS, even though, you know, they could use GPS should they want to. It's open to them, but that's what they use, CNS.
Yeah. There's also there's a thing called terrain reference navigation as well. I don't know whether you've heard of that, JB, which is... So using, it's not stealthy because you're putting out emissions, but using your RADALT, so the radar altimeter, or altimeter, I said the wrong word, you know, that basically pings, keeps pinging below the airplane and tells you exactly how high you are above the ground. Using the difference in height of the below you, it can work out, you know, if you're flying a constant height and it's showing that you're going up 50, down 20, up whatever, it then looks at its database and tells you exactly where you are in the world. So another, the F-16 that I flew 20 years ago in the States had that terrain reference navigation. So you could not use GPS using that.
Ah, nice. So just before we move this on elsewhere, what is the special skill you've developed? You got Ergodders?
It's the ability to go to Costa and carry 5 cups
That's incredible.
Of latte. At once, upstairs.
Up to the air vice marshal.
Up to anyone who's seen you.
Here's your cappuccino, sir. We've implemented the cuts.
I lined them up here, sir.
Have you got a camera on me during a day-to-day basis? Minute-by-minute basis? I have been Admiral Likes coffee.
Porky, you must have had some fairly good advice during your time.
Yeah. I was sort of thinking back and didn't give it a great deal of thought. Probably should have given it more. But the one guy, I think when you're sort of doing pilot training, you definitely, I sort of had a moment I can remember in the States, and I was flying with some B-52 instructor. And he was pretty miserable to fly with, and I really didn't like him. Then I flew with this Brit. There was a T-37 QFI who was on exchange out there, a guy called Rod Thomas, and he was just such a top mate to fly with. And, you know, essentially he just made me relax more whilst flying. And that was the best advice. You know, you don't want to be ridiculously tense, probably in anything, if you're trying to concentrate and do well. You've got to be relaxed so you can... you can do it. And, you know, obviously not over relaxed, not overconfident, but just getting that correct level so you could do it. And it was like sort of switching on a light bulb. And I so enjoyed flying. And that was the big thing, I think, for me. Then sort of, you know, you just feel your confidence building, and it's great. And pilot training was so much more fun after that.
It's funny you say, when we were going through elementary training at Swinderby on the Chipmunk, a guy called Mark Pickavance, and or Pickers, and he was a really top dude as well. He was a Hurt guy, but we were doing formation for the first time, and again, it's funny how things stay with you. So, and his advice was, you will get very tense when you're formating. It's just natural that you'll do that. You won't realize it, but you'll be gripping the stick so hard your knuckles will be white. So what you need to do is you just need to say to yourself, bunnies and kittens, bunnies and kittens, and then fingers and toes, and everything will be fine.
Did you find yourself saying bunnies and kittens? it's interesting, isn't it? Because when I was thinking about it earlier, although I'd forgotten that advice that actually I ended up talking about, was an individual, exactly as you guys have just said, that you end up you know, really enjoying flying with, or there is something about them. You know, it was Doc Brown when I went through Linton, who was one of the only fast jet pilots as an instructor. He was a Phantom pilot and had these brilliant stories of being on 43 Squadron with Phantoms, and was a really good guy to fly with as well. And you just end up, you know, enjoying it so much more for exactly the reasons that, you know, Parky's just talked about, or the odd pearl of wisdom, like, no, don't put the gear down there, you know, or something like that, you know.
We're doing 800 knots.
Yeah. It'll get ripped off.
Now, for most people watching Top Gun, it does seem like joining a fast jet squadron is not the most friendly experience when you first show up. What is the experience like when you first show up?
Exactly like that. Terrifying.
Really?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I don't know, JB, to go to something, you know, I mean, I guess it's akin to being an 18-year-old arriving at your first men's rugby club for the first time, playing 13 with these gnarled old buggers,
yes,
you know, who would just sort of punch you in the face if you do something wrong, or, you know, along those sorts of lines. It's exactly the same. You know, I was 10 years into my career on the minute that I walked into the squadron on the F-16 squadron. It was driven across America. It was, long story short, it was a brand new exchange. There'd never been a Brit before. And the guy who was assigned to look after me, he said, hey, come along to the squadron. You know, we've got a do this evening. And they're big old squadrons out in the States. So I walked into this place and it went deathly quiet. And I'm stood looking at all of these, you know, there's 50 odd American fighter pilots in there. I'm going, oh,
did you say, hello?
Well, so
went, a latte.
So the guy who was looking after me went,
I bought 5 lattes for you.
But that's what you did. And I said, go on, Britt, tell us about yourself. And as soon as you took breath, and I was going to go, hello, I went, and I went, ah, shut up. And, you know, started hurling abuse and throwing things at me. I was like, oh, my God, what have I walked into? But it turns out to everyone who joins. And then, you know, it's like any walk of life. In any squadron you've been on, there's some old grumpy fella in the corner who won't speak, done 3,000 hours in combat or something, you know. So it's pretty intimidating when you first get in there.
How about you, Dunk? I imagine joining a squadron with you on, Dunk, could be difficult.
Really? Why would you say that?
I don't know. I just have a feeling. I don't know why.
Really? I don't know. I think, you know, I'm welcome.
Those jokes in the corner.
Yeah. Hey, well, you know, the thing is normally when you go and join a squadron, you know, my first squadron was 3 squadron in Germany, but you do, although there are the, you know, the old and the bold, and actually, to be honest, there weren't that many old guys on the Harrier squadrons. I mean, they seemed old to us because we were only sort of mid 20s and early 30s, the flight commanders and things like that. And they were, you know, as Goddess says, they're pretty aggressive. They're war fighters. And, you know, it is a war fighting environment. So it's not, you know, come over here and sit on my knee and I'll tell you a story. You know, it's there's a bit more to it. So
I love that. Come here, sit on my knee, let me tell you a story. And that sinister voice is, you've been nice.
That was a different squadron. I was not on that squadron.
You were. You know you were.
No, but
Panzer squadron.
So the fact is that you've got a bunch of mates that you've gone through the OCU with, and they're on senior courses to you, but you know them. So you probably know the two tiers from your OCU, so you do at least know some people. And we used to call it the junta. So you join the junta, and that was the young cadre of junior pilots, effectively. And it was a tightest knit bunch of lads. It was great. So although there is that sort of intimidating air to it, you were also sort of joining a gang of dudes that would become your some of your greatest friends for life, effectively.
No,
it's there's a lot of, you know, you put your own sort of you know, that intimidation is you walking in there as well, wanting to do a really good job. You know, you've got a sort of weight of expectation on your shoulder. You don't want to screw up. You've still got a load of flying to do to get ready. So you can still get chopped on this squadron as well. So you really want to get on with the guys on the squadron. You hope it's going to be the fighter squadron that you sort of dreamed about. And it is very quick that you integrate, you know, and as Dunk says, you know, the younger ones generally take you under the wing. I remember, you know, Dunk and I were on different squadrons at the same time. And there were tons of us on both of the squadrons that were flying officers, you know, so sort of single stripers. you know, thrashing them out in Harriers in our early to mid 20s. And it was utterly brilliant once you got into that. And it's exactly the same as that rugby team. Once you played your first game or, you know, started your first game and you could wear the club tie, you're in the club. You wouldn't be anywhere else on the planet.
That's awesome. Now, the Harrier itself is a very unique aircraft. So I can't believe that you didn't get some sort of poison when you first showed up.
Going back quite a long way, that's the only thing, JB, and my memory's not that great. So it's tricky to...
sitting on the old pilot's lap, Dunk, then what happens?
Let me tell you a story.
Hang on, Dunk, I've got a doll. If you want to show me where...
Under the wing. So I'm quite happy with the sitting on the lap bit. God has been dragged off under the wing again.
What?
What you said, you got taken under the wing.
Oh, I see.
Lucky you.
Yes.
That's what it was like on Four Squadron.
That's not very good as a Dunk. advice thing, JB, I guess it comes thick and fast, doesn't it? In terms of everyone's got a top tip. And you end up, in fact, the same mate that we talked about who ejected on short finals and was on the mission planning course, was known for making what we termed gizzers, which were, little, probably A5 cards that had, you know, a script on of what you were to do. And, you know, was basically all the shortcuts of the checklist or something like that, or this is how to mission plan, or this is how to so-and-so. So there was all these sort of back pocket guides that people would write and, you know, yeah, look, I've made one of these and, you know, would save you about 3.5 minutes. But you know, it was that sort of thing. It's that sort of advice. I never really got a, because we all knew how to fly an aeroplane. It's probably a bit. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, but there must have been guys on squadron who, when you showed up, you thought, I'd quite like to fly like that guy.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's tricky to sort of, there were so many bits of that because, you know, you do turn up and although you've done the operational conversion unit, you're pretty green, you know, on the squadron. So you've got to learn particularly, well, it doesn't matter what jet it is really, but, Harrier was a complicated aeroplane. And so you had to, you learned things as you went along. You didn't learn everything on the OCU. So you then went on workups for certain things. You got cleared for more advanced VSTOL. So, vertical maneuvers, you started as your experience grew, you were taught new things. And again, it was the more experienced dudes on the squadron that would give you that advice. The thing is that I don't remember any one pearl of wisdom, particularly from because there's so many of them.
All right, so who
I think on the Harrier it was all the way forward if you're gonna move the nozzles in flight. There was a good bit of advice, and no one actually told you until you departed and had flames coming out the intake 15 times.
Okay, well, I think at this point it's worth mentioning. I'm going to move it on slightly. But have you guys been keeping up with the news from both Heathrow and Gatwick regarding their little incidents?
Yes, drone wars.
I'm literally about to say that. Now, before we talk about Gatwick and Heathrow, why doesn't God tell us exactly what he's had for Christmas?
Yes. So in an effort to get back to flying, I have purchased, in fact, Father Christmas gave me, on the recommendation of Parky, actually, this little racing drone that has a little camera in the front and you wear a set of, I was about to say VR goggles, but they're, you know, first person goggles. So you put these on your head and you're looking out of the camera on the front of this little drone and then you go flying. It's like being in an aeroplane again. It's flipping brilliant.
Is it actually analogous?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Parky, you're the expert here. I'm still on the conversion unit at the moment. I need some top tips, actually. I keep crashing a thing into the...
Yeah, that's good. So, are you...
Naked?
You need some time on the simulator first, on your computer.
Yeah, so just sorting that right now is wow. I'm going through a full conversion course here because, yeah. JB, if you watch stuff online of what... I mean, they're mainly youngsters, can do... with these things, it is unbelievable the sort of level of flying that they get to. And basically, I want to get good enough to go up to Parky and do some dog fighting with it in his back garden.
Oh, lovely.
Did that continue for you boys? Sorry to interrupt, but no, I lost you all completely then.
No, we got it. That was good. My number two lad, who's just graduated from Sandhurst Army and is going Army Air Corps. So he was out in the States and he got addicted to these first pilot view drones with his cousin. And he came back and ordered me to buy a couple of Rodeo 110s, which I duly did. And then he took the course with me. And we got a couple of them. And you each got your own gogs. But what you can then do is you can put his on, look at you as well. And it's like having an instructor beside you. And genuinely, I was nervous as my little lad said, OK, in your own time.
And
he just gently just goes, I think you're over controlling it, Dad. You know, it's like, oh, this is miserable. I'd rather be with Mason right now. You know, it was just horrendous flying this thing. But they are utterly brilliant. And it is, you know, if you get onto, you've got various modes, Goddard, sorry about this, but you can get it. So it's fully aerobatic, this drone. It, you know, it upside down, forward loops and backward loops and rolls and all sorts of stuff. And it is just utterly brilliant.
It's like being back in the Harry.
Yeah,
I have on my outings with it. I have you're going to laugh, but I haven't even taken it outside yet because I know I'll get a bit excited on the throttle and this thing will end up in a hedge or up a tree or something like that. But it is brilliant, and I don't know whether any kid would love to go on one of these things, but for me, it is look when you're looking through this set of goggles at what this little aeroplane is seeing. It is just like flying around in a real aeroplane. It's brilliant.
Isn't the house a little bit active? Is that where you keep crashing?
Maybe you should. No. But I'm just trying to get good at it in a small environment before I let myself loose in the local area.
So
shut down Heathrow.
So Parky very much sounds like the expert here. So what have you been using yours for? Flying over netball courts, nunneries.
No, it's
mostly male, JB.
I can see what you're saying. Just round the garden. I mean, that's the thing. You fly these things, and you know, James's advice when he first sort of was checking out, just don't go high because you know you suddenly can. Clearly, I guess there's a line of sight, or you know, if you go too far, then you just can't see it, and then you've lost your drone. So you don't really want to go very far. And you want to. It's just brilliant fun, just flying around at about.
Does not come back, is it?
No,
these aren't the bigger sort of GPS ones.
These are pretty tiny little things. They're not very big, you know, sort of, I don't know, 7 inches, tiny little, you know, thing. But, yeah, just stay low. They seem to be remarkably robust. I mean, we have splatted into the house and into the hedge and into, you know, all sorts. And just keep on flying. They're brilliant.
It'd be good, actually. There may be a listener or two who does this sort of stuff. We're talking about advice. There, I think I'd be well after any top tips that anyone's got on the at Pilot Episodes Pod.
Well, before we move us on a bit, have you boys seen drone racing?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's illegal.
I know. You know, and there's youngsters doing it. And I think I saw something online just the other day because clearly I now research drones online. But in that drone racing league, it's something along the lines of $50,000 a year that you can earn doing it. And Swatch have got a competition up at the moment where you can download their simulator. You log in, you fly the route, and they're going to sort of pick the top five to go for trials.
That's
or
amazing.
Something like that. So a youngster could end up as a drone racer for a living.
That's really interesting. Well, do you know where I've encountered drones the most so far? Not Heathrow, not Gatwick, before anyone cracks up.
Local park? People with Christmas presents?
Close enough. Sail Sharks. They've got two of them.
And, in terms of videoing?
Right, yeah. They climb over the training ground and get different angles of the boys' training. It's good. It's good for the social media. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, well, you see almost every single sort of TV program you see now on television, obviously.
Yep.
Has some sort of drone shot in it. You know, so I think they are so prevalent, and it's been interesting to see, actually, isn't it, that an alleged sighting at Heathrow shuts the place down, or
incredible.
You know, Gatwick was utterly for you know, what could or couldn't have been something flying around the local area, something tiny as well.
Yeah. Now you're no longer flying than Goddard's. Do you think you'd have a different view if you were flying on these drones?
No, I've still got the same view. If it's some idiot who's having a laugh, then fly them. You know, if it's someone doing it for nefarious reasons, then stick him in jail. You know, anyone picks up one of these things, it just has to be. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff you can read online about, you know, where to use drones, especially these bigger ones that Dunk was talking about. 4 or 5 kilometers, you press a button and they come back to where you started. You know, people have just got to do the. You wouldn't get in a car without reading the manual or having a test or doing all those sorts of things. They just got to be sensible.
Is the Navy using quadcopters in any way with the aircraft carriers, things like looking maintenance and that kind of thing?
No, they had
a drone land on the carrier, did they not?
Yeah, so that's interesting. That was when the Queen Elizabeth had stopped for fuel up in north of Scotland, and I think someone had flown a drone over the top and taken some photographs. And I think, you know, that was a realization right there and then that, okay, we it's not just the sort of physical security on the ground. You need to do, you know, you need to be able to stop these things in the air. And it was interesting because, you know, that military capability that was deployed down to Gatwick, they talk about the army, but it was actually the Royal Air Force Regiment with specialized kit in order to go and do it. Because guess what? You know, the RAF Regiment is there to defend airfields. And actually, will also the Army and the Air Force all use drones in that sort of ground surveillance type role as well, you know, because they're easy things, pretty cheap, that you can have on a battlefield.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, gives you a view that's better than the hill you stood on.
Well, it might be worth saying this, at this point, which is... Do any of you remember the story about the Syrian drones attacking the Russian airbase?
Yes.
It's like drones inflicted, you know, seven million quid's worth of damage, or maybe even more.
Yeah, I mean, as has been in the papers recently, these things are really easy to weaponize, aren't they? If you're determined enough, And actually, one thing, not having been a radio-controlled person before, Parky, I was massively surprised by how many switches and channels and things are on the controller, which is obvious, really. You know, it's for flaps and undercarriage and stuff like that for people who are flying the sort of bigger, complicated aeroplanes. So there's all sorts of things you can do with them, you know. And so that's why the RAF regiment already, and British Army and Navy already have that sort of anti-drone capability. Exactly that sort of reason.
I got stuck in Luxembourg, Gatwick. I saw it firsthand. It's quite a sinking feeling. We actually went through.
They were tell us this. That whole thing in the airport about which gate you went through. Come on, they don't want to hear that. Yeah, got put in the hotel. You had to get bat-faced. We know.
That's it. Yeah. So that's my my little tiny bit on drones.
Excellent.
Does it float your boat at all, Dunk? You know, is it something that
just don't seem to find the time? I don't know. You managed.
I am. Can I just say, I'm staggered that you find drones interested, Dunk. Interesting.
Why?
Well, because you strike me. I mean, I saw your face and your entire spirit sink when they sat you in the front of a Gulfstream 750. Like, oh, God.
It's only because I couldn't fly it. I knew I was just going to get out of it.
Screens and all the rest of it.
I'd have been different if we could have gone flying in it. That'd have been great.
So I'm just amazed that you'd be happy to stand on the ground and control it from there, rather than actually get in it with like lots of little levers and pulls and all the rest of it, and switches.
No, anything flying, and I'm very happy to get fully involved.
Oh, there you go.
A recommendation of something, a thing called Flight Test, FLITE test, and it's a bunch of guys out in the States. They've been doing it for a few years, but these guys are sort of radio-controlled ninjas. And it is unbelievable, the stuff that they build and go flying. And one of the episodes, they end up flying, it's probably a 15-foot Imperial Star Destroyer from The Empire Strikes Back that they managed to get airborne and fly around the place, put it in the back of a truck.
Wow.
And drive it down their little airfield thing to get it airborne. But this guy is fully in control of it.
And how does that work?
Well, what's the episode? They build a small scale model, and there was another one I watched, just because you know how it is. You start a drone thing, and then all of a sudden the next video pops up, and this one they built 10 really, really cheaply, and they end up putting, you know, the BB guns.
Oh yeah,
the sort of machine guns inside, and they had this one. They ended up flying it at dusk. And they had this remote control tank, and this A-10 probably had six, seven, 8 foot. And they had a camera inside the cockpit, and the little soft airsoft pellets that it was shooting. They're white pellets, and the gun that they bought has this light that comes out of the barrel. So these pellets look like tracer, so that you can see them.
Cool.
And they're flying this thing on this big old golf course and letting it rip and trying to shoot this tank. It's flipping amazing. Flight Test. Definitely worth the look for these guys who are just super ninjas with radio control aeroplanes.
Brilliant work. Brilliant work. Right. Well, okay. So this is what we're going to do now. First of all, you're in a quick sentence going to be of advice that you would give to an airman now coming through the ranks. And then Godders is going to read the questions that we're on Twitter.
Excellent. Who's going first then?
An airman coming. Do you mean a pilot through pilot training?
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
I'm going to go with don't give up.
Interesting.
You know, there's plenty of times you remember going through basic flying training or elementary flying training or whatever it happened to be, where you were sat there and the last thing in the world you wanted to mind, because you might have had a rough trip the one before. You're praying for bad weather when you get up in the morning, you know, you open that out the window. You end up being ground happy until you can really enjoy it again. But it would be so easy to throw in the towel sometimes, you know. And I think all of us ended up getting where we have done and not giving up. And, you know, it's probably a good bit of advice. You know, everyone wants to at some point just get through it.
I think that's an excellent bit of advice.
Marco?
I mean, I never thought about giving up. That was, just wouldn't have occurred. But I think to try and enjoy it as much as you can. You know, sometimes it's obviously the best job in the world. We all utterly love it, but it's hard work. There's times it's just, you can't do it. It's difficult, but the more you can try and enjoy it and get pleasure out of it, I just think you perform better. And, you know, that's probably my advice. Dunk, you, what's your little pearl?
Come on, you must have been... Trim. Trim properly.
Trim.
Get the ball in the middle. Trim.
Read your manual and follow it.
Yeah.
It's got, are you going to go with be humble?
Be humble. Look, don't claim he would win the Red Bull Air Race on his first attempt.
Yeah. I reckon we probably all would.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so. How hard can it be? Just got to have the opportunity. I think as well, Formula One racing, that can't be that difficult, can it? It's just driving a car, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, we could talk about G on the next pilot episode, but they don't pull anywhere near proper G.
Actually, are you guys any good at driving? And I mean that seriously, because obviously you're good at flying. Does it translate?
Yes.
Because we could quite easily test this by going go-karting.
We have been go-karting.
And who won?
Lots of times.
Yeah. Lots of pile-ups.
Lots of pile-ups.
I imagine a look of horror on the 21-year-old operative's face who was in charge of running the go-kart circuit for that day when the three RAF lads rock up.
Well, it's not the three RAF lads. It's when an entire squadron rocks up and you know that someone will be driving the wrong way against the stream around the track.
In the squadron bus.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know though that we go karting all the time, and the most dangerous thing was actually the drive back after the karting in the minibus,
because when the minibus doesn't work like the
like the go-kart. Start running out the flipping carts.
So who is the best go kart driver out the three of you?
That'll be me, sir.
Get out, Parky. I think the last time I beat you.
No way, your thrust of fate is so rubbish.
I beat you the last time we went.
You need to be a lighter gentleman, Dunk.
I remember you absolutely gutted because you didn't make the final.
Did you throw your helmet down, Dunk? Was this in the Reds?
No, it was BBMF. We went and Parky for somehow...
What, the whole BBMF?
I won it with KP.
Didn't win it.
Yay.
The whole BBMF and go-karting.
Yeah.
Now, this is a story which you kept quiet. This sounds fascinating.
Well, not really. We just went go-karting. But that was one of the boys leaving dues, wasn't it? Parky is quite good, normally. It's just I was utterly delighted at this time.
Oh, Mason, I can't believe you broke.
No, I didn't break. He spun off this time or something. He's quite good, isn't he? He's like a wiry little terrier.
Trust the weight, Dunk.
Hey, I know what I want to speak about. Before we speaking of wiry ginger little terriers.
Oh yeah.
Have we seen on Twitter? I can't work out quite who did this, but we've now got Parky
is on Twitter.
On Twitter @ yes. Lego Parky.
I think we've got a question from Lego Parky as well, because I'm now including him in all of our tweet stuff.
Do you see his name about this before we carry on?
Well, it's a little ginger red arrow, Parky. A little Lego ginger red arrow. And he's just been on holiday as well. Was it London City he flew out of? But there's a picture of him in his seat in the aeroplane.
Yeah. He's a bit taller than the real Parky, but other than that, it's remarkably similar.
And he's a bit more supple. Got two wrinkles.
So on that bombshell, shall we go to Twitter?
Yeah, let's do it.
And see what they're saying. Right, actually, in fact, there is Lego Parky. First one, Graham McDowell. Now, I actually work with Graham McDowell. I made him a coffee today.
Did you? So he's senior to you?
I did actually make him a coffee.
Sorry, just before you go what does Graham do?
No, he's not, but I'm a man of the people.
Well done, you. And what does Graham do?
DSTL, so he's one of our scientists.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And he really likes Formula One, actually. I keep telling him that they're, you know, anyone could do it. But he has said, when does the Formation drone racing team start up? Yes, Parky, I can see it. If I pass my OCU, should we go and earn 50 grand?
It's very difficult. I've tried it with James. We've done a few at night. They've got little torches on the front. Have you seen little
yes.
light?
Yeah.
You could. It's really good. You can see them. Do a few pointing at each other, bits. But I think quite A level, and you need to maybe concentrate on your flying, basic flying, one step at a time, Godders.
Okay, there you go. There's some advice from Parky. He does say recommend not practicing near any major flying major airfield. So, Steamter, best film about flying ever made.
Top Gun
mark.
Next.
Say again.
Top Gun next.
No.
Top Gun is. It just is. It just is.
I think you're right. The photography in that is just amazing.
And also the innuendos and, you know, iconic scene. Look, there are other good films out there, but it is Top Gun, so we don't need to discuss that much longer, unless you want
Battle of Britain.
Battle of Britain.
It's not the Battle of Britain.
All one-liners in the Battle of Britain that you can use.
No line is better than I want butts, give me butts.
That's going back to the
Yes. The, yeah, right, so there's two. But what about... We're going to get into the... If that's the best, what's the worst flying film you've ever seen?
Oh, that's...
Is it Iron Eagle?
Ooh, could be.
Oh, I love Iron Eagle, so it must be pretty bad.
What's Queen, One Vision, whilst flying an Israeli F-16? Utterly brilliant.
I need to watch this now.
You talked yourself out of that answer, didn't you?
Really?
What other really bad flying films are there?
Snakes on a plane.
Hot shot.
It's when they go do CGI, don't they? And it's just utterly unbelievable. Even Pearl Harbor, the flying scenes in that.
You're right, actually. Pearl Harbor's terrible.
It could have been so much better. They just went over the top.
I've got a question for you. If there was to be a new film made regarding flying, which event would it be?
Ooh. What about the Falklands War?
Do you know what? That's exactly what I was thinking. Either the Black Buck or... I know
the Black Buck one would be a bit dull, though, wouldn't it? It'd just be... tanking, then 2 hours.
Yeah, I guess it would be, wouldn't it?
Sat there and
I think they might montage that rather than just play 2 hours. Yeah.
Come and see the Black Buck film. Fancy, it's 10 hours long.
Fancy a sandwich? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I tell you the other one. The name of it now, basically the operation to resupply Malta, which I know isn't strictly a flying film itself, but there was a lot of flying involved. Can't remember what it's called now.
Oh, the operation.
Yeah.
It'll come to me in a minute. But what about Taranto? That'd be quite a good one.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. A load of swordfishes. Swordfish.
Oh, yeah.
In Eric Winkle Brown's book, he talks about a raid where the boys with the SAS went down and stole. It was actually a four-engined Heinkel called the Griff, but it was it just had two propellers, but both propellers had sort of two engines inside. Very complicated aircraft. Wasn't a success, but at the time Hitler was saying it was his sort of wonder bomb and it would change the war. But essentially, the boys, they knew they were servicing some in Bordeaux, and I think sort of post D-Day, they basically broke into this Luftwaffe base and stole one of them and flew it back to Farnborough. And I think that would make a cracking film.
That's amazing. That is simply good. Amazing, isn't it?
Right, someone listening to this pod must be able to get the film rights for that and then go and make it.
Operation Pedestal is what I was thinking.
There you go. Good lad. In fact, Adam Spink does say, here's a question. If the chaps had been unable to become pilots in the RAF, maybe for medical reasons, I like that extra, possibility. What other career would they have chosen? 20 points for the first one who replies pilot in the Navy/Army. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Airline pilot.
Yeah, and maybe most of it in terms of aviation. I'm sure I've had this conversation with Dunk, but we didn't really have a plan B, Dunk.
No, we definitely didn't have a plan. Mine genuinely was, I'm going to have to be a dustman.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't have a plan B either.
I always thought that Dunk would have worked in an abattoir.
Now you come to mention it, that does sound
quite like
fun,
doesn't it?
An abattoir instructor.
Yeah. Don't know about you other two. I'll have to think about that more.
Barista.
Barista.
A big beard. No, airline pilot. Still flying. I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah, what would you do if you didn't become a pilot? Airline pilot.
From the RAF aircraft. Pilot, he said. I have no idea what I would have done. I have absolutely no idea.
Match.
Yeah, same. Good job we got in then.
What would you do, JB, if you weren't a financial advisor?
Oh, crikey. I was thinking today about not working ever again and just doing podcasts and covering rugby and doing all these other things which I try and fit into my spare time. I have no idea if I could do it again. I might have joined the Air Force in my formative years. You can still get out by 25 and, you know, go and do something else straight afterwards. I did nothing of any use from 18 to 25.
And you're only 26 now.
I wish.
Yeah.
Right, there you go. A disappointing answer to that, in that no one knows what the hell we would have done. So it's lucky we did become pilots. Here's one from Bren at Brent Fly Big Bird. Have any of you seen a UFO whilst flying?
Oh, that's a great question.
No.
I thought I did. I thought I did once.
Go on, tell us about that then. Where were you?
I was it was probably before you were born, JB, but it was mid to late 90s, and it was when the Halley-Bopp comet was in town.
I remember
that. We were on a Harrier flying detachment up in Scotland, and I was doing some low level at night on night vision goggles, and it was an evening, it was fully overcast. It was pretty crap weather, actually. And I went, I'm going to forget the name of the Moffett Valley. That's what happened. So I was flying down the Moffett Valley, which is on the borders. And you fly down this valley, JB, and it's got a hard 90 left towards the end of it. And then there's a hard 90 right. And
is this at night?
Yeah. Okay. So it's tricky in the day, you know, especially when you're looking for weather, because you kind of move one side of the valley, see if you can see around the corner to make sure there's no weather, and then turn into it. And it's much trickier at night because through the night vision goggles, you can't really see the weather. And I ended up coming around the last 90, rolled out, and immediately went into cloud and thought, oh my God. So flew a low-level abort, which is, you know, basically you point the aeroplane on its ass, go full power, and scream skywards to avoid flying into any hills. And it was something I was just not ready for, but I broke cloud at about, I don't know, 5,000 feet or something like that. And it was gin clear above. And I looked up on the goggles and saw, you know, so the comet you could see with the naked eye, but with the night vision goggles on, oh my God, this thing was enormous. And the, you know, there was this huge front end and a, this massive tail going backwards. I had no idea what it was. But I immediately thought I was going to hit it, so rolled back upside down and pulled as hard as I could and went back into cloud.
Oof.
Down towards the bloody holes.
I'm trying to imagine your life. You've already gone into cloud and gone, oh my God, and then aborted. You come out of the cloud, oh my
what
God.
What is that?
Oh, flipping heck, it's an alien. And then smashed straight back into the cloud, recovered from an unusual position and came back up again very gingerly to the cloud whilst looking out, wondering what the hell that thing was and realising it was a big comet.
Wow. Actually, as you mentioned in comets, a flying film, which does it class as a flying film? The film Armageddon.
Drilling it into Bruce Willis.
That's the one. What I love about that is that it's easier to train oil workers from the North Sea to be astronauts than astronauts to use a drill.
Yeah, tough men from the heartland. I did. I was flying with a guy, Welzer, in the Typhoon once. So I don't know whether you guys had ever had this, but we had a shooting star, you know, so a little meteorite. Come directly between the formation. You know, normally these things you will see burn out. So we're up at 40,000 feet, and this thing, again, we're on night vision goggles, but I can see it was so bright outside the cockpit, just flashed between us. And I thought he'd let off all of his flares. And so I did the radio. I went, did you just flare? He went, no, did you? And it was in the debrief on the ground, you know, because you see little shooting stars the whole time on night vision goggles. But the only possible explanation for this, unless it was a UFO, was a little shooting star coming between us in the formation. But it was just white hot and streaking past.
So, okay, I am assuming that someone in the RAF has at some point seen a UFO. This is me being conspiratorial. Are you allowed to talk about it if you see it? Do you have to sign anything? Is there anything which prevents you talking about it, or is that just simply myth?
Boys, you know what he's talking about?
No idea.
Perfect.
Hey, before Goddess keeps on going with the questions, I've got to read this one out because it's a belter. It's from our mate Frog, who is at Flap62. Is there a reason why we record each podcast on a 1982 TDK C90?
I don't even know what that means.
It's so Frog can use it in his audio equipment.
I think he might be referring to the varying sound quality of podcasts.
I take great offence at that. Great offence.
Yeah, I tell you what, JB. I think Frog is a. I don't know whether he's a captain in BA now, but he's definitely the most senior first officer on the planet, an ex-Harry guy. That's an idiot. And, but I think his claim to fame, he did. They did this TV program. It was only two, three, four, 5 years ago, where it was all about keeping your heart rate as low as you could whilst you answered questions. And I think he won about 20 grand or something like that.
Because
they put a heart rate monitor on you and were firing questions at you. And you know, if your heart rate went above a certain level, you were booted off. I can't even remember the exact rules, but you were booted off. And he got all the way to the final, did really, really well.
You'd be good at that, wouldn't you? You're like a sloth just sat there sort of.
Heart rate of 2.
Exactly, yes. Occasionally, if a meteorite passes between your aircraft, it might pop up to 3.
Yeah, like the heart rate of a hibernating terrapin.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, listen, I've also got to I've got to apologise for something. So I got into trouble. So I don't know. I've been getting a few texts here and there from saying, you know, like the podcast. It takes me back to crew room days, et cetera, et cetera. And last podcast, we gave a shout out to Greg Baker in Oman. Hi, Greg. And but because some of you boys mentioned Greg Perilou, and I went, no, well, Greg's got in touch with me and he is not happy. So this time, got to say hi to Greg Perilou out in Hong Kong. So hi, Greg.
Hello, Greg.
Shout outs that you've got to do, or is it just me?
I can't believe how good at podcasts we're getting shout outs already.
So famous.
Here's one from Isles G. What did we all get from Secret Santa? Did you boys do Secret Santa at work?
Meg.
I did do a secret Santa, but I actually got a sort of surprise gift over Christmas, which I'm going to mention now. Which is, I actually got an episode that I remember. I got an issue of the magazine Wings, which I was delighted with.
Oh, that's a belter. In fact, oddly enough, just as you've said that, Wings Mag has just liked one of our tweets about the podcast.
Yeah.
There we go. That's serendipity.
I mean, I would just suggest if you do like this podcast that you'll probably like Wings because it arrived about 2 weeks ago. It is a magnificent thing. It's basically a piece of art which you put on your coffee table and occasionally read. It really is a lovely thing.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to go and get a copy now.
Gents, what did you boys get?
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about the rest. Did you do Secret Santa at work there, Dung?
No, it's not. It's not MOD with us. You know, we don't have any of that sort of stuff. But no,
you just go flying.
Exactly, just fly around. But none of us like each other, so you know, it's no one wants to buy each other anything.
Lumps of coal all around.
Oh yeah, there is one. It's just I'm not in it.
Yeah, we're going to get a tweet from CFS in a minute saying, we all did Secret Santa in another room.
I'm very popular.
I got a little aircraft carrier shaped erasers.
Oh, erasers! Nice. Yeah.
I got for Christmas though, if we're going to do Christmas presents, I got an Xbox One controller so I can play on my son's Xbox One with Star Wars Battlefront 2.
Oh, nice.
It's brilliant. I love it. I get my head smashed in every time.
Can you fly snowspeeders?
Not yet.
I know they're twin seat, but I always fancied flying a snowspeeder.
Yeah. Oh, can you in the game?
Yes.
I think so. You can pretty much, you know, fly, drive, hover, anything.
Nice. I'm
you can't choose, though. You just have to do it when it tells you.
I am seriously thinking about doing some sort of serious games setup in the dungeon, because actually, the dungeon's my studio, and it's underground. I just think it'd be really cool. On the other hand...
I got Battlefield 5. You go online, and I have been shot within about 10 seconds, and that's probably a good game for me.
Do you do what the rest of us do and just give up at that point? Because if you're not brilliant at it,
sort of gone to sort of just being a sniper and kind of hiding, hoping to get the odd lucky
hang
kill.
Hang on, Parky.
It's a bit. I just don't know how these boys are so good at it. It's just quite depressing.
Have you got an Xbox, Parky?
Yeah.
And Dunk's got one as well.
Well, my boy has.
God, this. Do you have a?
I think I've got an Xbox 360 in the garage.
No, that's no good. Because I was going to say, I mean, there must be some sort of fighter style game that we could get involved with. Start some sort of squash ladder.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, there must be CFS Harrier pilots or something on the Xbox. Yeah,
there must be.
Yeah, there's bound to be.
Trimming competition.
just practice vertical landing in peacetime.
Easy.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Easy.
Lovely.
Right, here's a question from Nick Aranda. What was your first sortie as a qualified pilot? Did my first as a newbie PPL last week. Never been service in my life. Yeah. Good lad.
Congratulations. Well done. Yeah.
We clearly got back down again, so that's good news.
Yeah, exactly. He's tweeting, unless he's still up there. well done, Nick. First sortie as a qualified pilot. I took a mate flying. I was 17 years old. Because I'd been doing the flying scholarship, I hadn't had any driving lessons yet. And it seems ridiculous, but, you know, 17-year-old mate drove me to Red Hill Aerodrome. We got in this Cessna and went flying. And I just remember seeing these big saucer eyes as we sort of did high angle turns over Guildford Cathedral, you know. And, you know, when my son was 17, I wouldn't have put him in charge of a hairdryer, let alone an aeroplane. Whoever let me go flying in that flipping thing with another mate at 17-year-old.
That's incredible. At
17 years old, must have been mad.
Yeah.
Insane.
Flying with mates. I've got a PPL. Anybody want to come fly?
Dunk, you must have done the same thing.
Well, no, I don't think I did.
Oh, no, because you didn't get a PPL outside, did you?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't get one until I got my wings in the Air Force. So as a qualified pilot, I suppose, was my first trip after being a qualified Air Force pilot. So it was my wings graduation fly past at RAF Chivenham.
Oh, that's a good one. What did you do for the fly past?
Oh, well, it was just the four of us. So it was a box four.
Nice.
Box four past the tower. Bit of flying around. Nothing too much. We definitely didn't wire them.
Definitely didn't. And did you stay on the runway on this particular occasion down at Chivenham?
Oh, now, come on. We've all gone off the runway at some point.
I know.
All three of us. We've done that.
I know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Just JB. We need to get you involved in some sort of crash, JB.
Yeah, that'd be ideal, really. Well, I mean,
join the club.
Well, hang on. Didn't you mention just a completely off, you know, not offhand, can't think of the word, in random conversation on your other podcast the other day that you'd been knocked off your bike?
Oh, yeah, I got absolutely smashed. Some lunatic drove right across a junction, right into my path. I hit the bonnet, went over the bonnet, the bike went over me, and because obviously I'm a tough, hard rugby player, I popped up immediately. Yeah, not hurt. Cycled on, the hip wasn't quite right, but bloody £300 worth of damage to my bike, and I never got their license plate or phone number.
Blimey.
That's out of order, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those, like, the problem is, I'm a terrible driver, okay? And I can imagine myself, that's actually one of the reasons that I don't drive. I'm worried about killing someone. So I've given up the car and I just cycle everywhere. So I was.
We saw you getting into the Gulfstream, to be honest. It doesn't surprise
exactly
me.
Right. But, I mean, the A380 is a big aircraft and I could hardly, you know, get into that thing without knocking something over. I can imagine myself.
So we all have crashed.
Oh, I've done more than crash. I on an icy road in North Wales. Okay, so I've had three crashes that I can think of. First one was by far the worst, which was I was on an icy road on the side of a mountain in North Wales. The front of my car went over what looked like a 3-foot hedge on one side, a 6-foot hedge on the other side, flipped it, and then started rolling down the hill. And luckily, I hit a tree, because after that tree was about a 20-foot house. So and I remember because I had one of the brand new Nokia phones. Do you know the Nokias when they first came out? Massive, bigger than a smartphone. Slide in and out. It had a camera in it. The first ever real camera phone in on the mass market. So
the slidey one out of the Matrix.
No, before that it was bigger. It was about the width of an iPhone. I remember because I had it that day, and my first instinct after rolling and watching a tree stump come and crush a passenger side with no one is in, was like, right, must get out of this car. I ran about 20 yards, stopped, turned around, went back to the car, grabbed my phone, and then carried on running. So, yes.
Did you then film it sliding out from the tree and then going through the house?
I don't think it had a video function. I think it's just a camera function, but bloody terrifying.
That's good.
Yeah.
Right. There's not many people that say, thank goodness I crashed into a tree.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I've had many lucky escapes, but that was probably my luckiest.
Right, final couple of questions then. Here's one here, and I forgot. I meant to mention this, actually, but this is from Chris W. at Walton 7. Memories from walking through the gates of Cromwell for the first time. Now, that's related to a tweet I put out on Sunday, which was... January the 6th, and Dunk and I walked through the gates of Cromwell for the first time on January the 6th, 1991. So I think my first memory was, who's that bloody idiot that I'm sharing a room with?
it was until Mason. Later we shared a room.
Oh, yeah, it was the next 6 weeks. Yeah. I have exaggerated. Yeah. But, it would have been some sort of terrified, am I going to crack this, as I watched a load of people get ironing boards out of their cars and not know really what the hell was going on.
Oh, surfers!
Yeah, I was at a surfing.
Any of you three ever think of going to Welbeck?
Oh no,
no.
To Welbeck College.
It's a military college, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, my cousin's got in. He's going the army route, but apparently it's Air Force, Navy, the lot.
Was there military in your family?
No. He's just decided to do it, and he's got in.
You have to be smart. I don't think about it.
Yeah, no. That's true.
I don't know. Well, I assume he must be bright then. But yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting one because you do that, and then you go straight to either Stranwell or wherever else it may be.
Does it qualify you for? Do you still have to pass the selection process?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm sure you still have to do the tests and interviews.
Interesting. Any further questions there, Godders?
I think we'll call it a day there because there's a couple of others that might take a while to answer, so we'll save them up for next time. But some questions in there. Thanks, everyone, for writing in.
Well, I have a question for you, Godders.
Yes.
When we go into hybrid air vehicles?
Oh, I'm sorting it out.
Excellent. So we'll do one more of these podcasts over the phone, over Skype, and then the one after that we're going to do from an aircraft hangar somewhere with a massive balloon, right?
With an enormous air vehicle in there.
Hybrid air vehicle. Airlander 10.
Hybrid air vehicle.
So that's one more of these in June, and then October.
that sounds about right. We'll try and get another one out in the next few weeks, and God has get on it with...
Yeah, I'm on it.
With hybrid air vehicles.
We've got leads for all sorts of really cool stuff. We just need to work out time, JB, when you're not actually podcasting or doing your day job.
I'm all, well, no, I, I'm I'm free. If you let me know,
God is, you're on what thin time ice, where mate, to be. Because it was tonight, everyone was like, oh, yeah, we can do Monday. Yeah, we could do Tuesday. Yeah, but Goddess can't do it. Anyone, can we do it tonight? Yeah, we can do one tonight if we start at midnight, because I've got a little do I've got to go to.
I had a champagne reception. I could not miss la-di-da. That.
Film
at the Royal Chelsea Hospital. I spoke to some Chelsea
pensioners. Were you lining up the champagne for the two-star?
Yes.
I've got you. We've moved on from coffee, sir. Here's some champagne.
Five glasses here.
Talking to a nice Chelsea pensioner. That place is a belter, actually, if you've ever been there.
What? Chelsea?
Chelsea Hospital.
Okay, nice.
Anyway,
yes. Okay, well, I guess we'll see you in a few weeks' time. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Pilot Episode Pod. You can follow Godders at, God's Tweet? Godders Tweet? Godders Tweet. And Dunk, you are...
I'm at Doug Major 222.
Doug Major 222. Me, I'm at Jay Beardmore, but you can also follow Lego Parky.
Which is at Lego Parky.
Simple, at Lego Parky.
In fact, let me just, I'm just going to check and see how many followers Lego Parky has at the moment.
That is going to take off. It's brilliant. I love, by the way, there's a picture of Lego
68,
Parky.
68 followers.
Wow.
He's looking out of a rainy aircraft window. Saying rainy flight back from Paris today, chaps.
I'm holding it up here, Dunk.
Exactly.
Personally, I think the funniest tweet from Lego Parky is the one where he's flying a drone over an all-girls school. Don't know what that's all about, but it's still hilarious.
There's another one. He's not wearing his red suit there. He's obviously got a bunch of...
There's a horrible thought.
It's probably not podcast material, is it? With people listening to it. We're just looking at pictures on at Lego Parky. So go and follow him.
That bombshell and all that.
Indeed. All right, gentlemen. I will see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Cheers. Bye.
See you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.